the basis of running a marathon is learning how to run on tired legs or even a half marathon. That's what you really want to nail, is being able to go out there and be like, wow, my legs are really sore from maybe the day before. I need to learn how to adapt and overcome and keep pushing. And so you can do that even running back-to-back days instead of just putting all your runs on one day.
Hello, I'm Jeff Sankoff, the Tri-Doc, an emergency physician, triathlete, triathlon coach, and multiple Ironman finisher, coming to you from beautiful, sunny Denver, Colorado. And this is the April 5th edition of the Tri-Doc podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. There's a lot going on in the world of triathlon, and the biggest news, of course, is that tomorrow we finally see the kickoff of the North American 70.3 series, with the big race taking place in Oceanside. There is a lot of excitement around this event. It's the first in the Ironman Pro Series, and there is a huge start list that is showing up, including on the men's side, friend of the podcast and friend of mine, Matt Sharp. There will be many others, though, who will be towing the line, looking to try and secure the first points in that Pro Series, and it's going to be a very exciting day indeed. I, for one, am looking forward to watching the event, hoping for an improvement in what we can only call some questionable kind of quality in terms of broadcasts previously, but no matter how the quality of the commentating is, there's no question the quality of the racing is going to be outstanding, with the likes of Sam Long, Lionel Sanders, Chris Lieferman, Joe Skipper is going to be there. I mean, it's just the list of men is something like 60 deep, and the list of women is a little bit thinner in terms of numbers, but no less impressive in terms of talent. Returning champion Tamara Jewett will be there, as will Paula Finley. Taylor Nibb is going to be showing up, as well as many others. Emma Pallant-Brown, just to name a few, and it's going to be just a sensational day. So hoping for great ocean conditions so that we don't have to see a harbor swim, but can actually see the ocean start that Oceanside has been famous for in the past, and we will see what comes of it. One other little piece of news that I came across this week and was discussing with Stephanie Van Beber, who is a coach and triathlete and who is going to be joining me on the medical mailbag in just a few moments. She and I were discussing the release of the new Form goggles, the version 2 of these goggles. The reason that these goggles were a topic of conversation is because for the first time, they include a compass in them, which is offering a swim straight technology that Form is suggesting can help to make open water swimming faster, because it will allow you to fix a bearing and be able to swim towards the buoys without having to zigzag quite as much as a lot of open swimmers do. Now, we are kind of aligned in our feeling that this is not necessarily a great thing. We feel like the reliance of technology in the swim, especially something like this, that is not going to be easily obtainable by everybody. These are, after all, a $250 pair of goggles. And you then have to pay $8.50 a month for the premium subscription to be able to enable the compass and the straight swim feature. So we kind of both felt like this was a little bit of an unfair advantage skewed towards those who were going to be able to afford this kind of technology. But again, as I've mentioned in the past, a great business move by a company that's looking to secure an increased market share. You know, they say on the website that this has been shown in their own testing to really dramatically improve swim times because it takes away the navigation skills. But I find myself wondering, as did Coach Stephanie, whether or not navigation skills shouldn't be considered part of the process in a triathlon. We all learn open water swimming, how important it is to sight, how important it is to be able to maneuver your way to the next buoy. Stephanie brought up the fact that Form goggles are not an option for her because she has difficulties with her vision. She requires very strong glasses, and she can't use the Form goggles because she needs prescription goggles in order to be able to see when she's swimming. And Form does not make prescription goggles. Also, as they explained to her, the heads-up display just doesn't work for people with significant visual impairment. So, you know, is this an unfair advantage for those people who have better vision, who are able to afford this technology? And if it actually works, and DC Rainmaker's review seems to suggest that it does, then I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. What do you think? I would be interested to know if you don't have a pair, but you're thinking, you know what, this is a game changer for me. I'm going to go out and get a pair. I'd also be interested in knowing if you think this is an unfair advantage. Drop me a line. Send me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com. Or alternatively, join the private Facebook group for the TriDoc podcast. If you're not already a member, you can answer the three easy questions. I'll grant you admittance. And I would love to hear your comments on the Form 2 goggles, whether or not you think this is an unfair advantage, whether or not you think this is a level playing field, and just one more piece of technology. Now, I should mention that the Form goggles have been approved for use in Ironman races, USAT races, among other international governing bodies. And that's not a huge surprise because Form has embedded themselves as a pretty impressively paying sponsor for these organizations. Go to the USAT website, go to the Ironman website, and Form goggles are one of the first products you're going to see because they pay as much money as they do to sponsor. So it's not all that surprising that this product was going to be approved immediately. Also, I guess not that surprising given that, what are they going to do? Police everybody coming through the swim chutes? I mean, this is a pretty easy goggle to miss. It looks not all that different from other goggles, so I don't think it would have been really, really hard to police this. And so I think that those organizations really had no choice but to approve this technology. But again, I'm interested. What do you think? Let me know. Send me an email. Join the conversation in the website, on the Facebook group, and I would really be interested in hearing. On the podcast today, as I mentioned, Stephanie Van Beber is going to be joining me for the medical mailbag. The reason for that is because my good friend, Coach Juliet Hockman, is on holiday this week. She is away with her husband, off the grid, away from Wi-Fi, no electronic devices allowed. And so subbing in for her is Stephanie Van Beber to help me answer a listener question related to the use of medium chain triglycerides. These short chain fatty acids have been advertised as being an excellent source of energy to help fuel long distance training as well as racing. But is there any evidence to support those advertising notions, or is this yet again just a fallacy that marketers have latched onto in order to try and get you to part with your hard-earned cash dollars? We'll take a look at the evidence and bring you our opinions. That's coming up in just a short bit. Later, I'm joined by the dynamic duo of Aaron Rosen and Michaela Robertson, who are the co-founders of Strides for Strength. They're also both nurses and certified running coaches. They're going to talk to me about how they got into the sport of running, how they came together to form the company Strides for Strength, where they encourage runners of all kinds of abilities to share their experiences and become better at their sport and better at life all the way along. I look forward to sharing that conversation with you, and that's going to be coming up in just a little bit. Before we get to all of that, of course, I do want to take a moment once again to thank all of my Patreon supporters who have decided that for about the price of a cup of coffee per month, they would sign up to support this podcast and in return get access to bonus episodes that come out about once a month or so. In addition, if you decide to sign up at the $10 per month level, like my newest supporter, Mira Rao, who signed up just last month, she will receive, just like you can if you sign up at that level, a wonderful TriDoc Podcast BOCO running hat at no charge. My gift to you in thanks for your support. But even if you don't, I just thank you for taking a look and considering doing such a thing because it helps me keep this podcast going and helped me keep it getting better. You could find out all the information about how to sign up and what's involved at my Patreon site, which is found at patreon.com/TriDocPodcast. And as always, thank you very much just for considering. It's time again for the medical mailbag, that section of the program, when I'm usually joined by my friend and colleague, Coach Juliet Hockman. But Juliet is away on holiday, and she and her husband, Steve, have gone off the grid. No computers allowed, no Wi-Fi, which means that I have a very capable substitute. Joining me today for the medical mailbag is my friend, longtime listener of the podcast. We actually met because she was a longtime listener of the podcast. Her name is Stephanie Van Beber. She is the Senior Director of Clinical Trials Office at Inova Shar Cancer Institute in Northern Virginia, but she's also a very accomplished triathlete. She has won her age group numerous times. She has qualified for the 70.3 World Championships at least, what, two or three times now?
Yep.
Two or three times now. We are going to be going together to New Zealand so that she can race and then I will race there. And she is also, for the last year and a half or so, a coach. She goes by Coach SVB, and I'll include the appropriate ways to reach her and find her on the interwebs. But for now, Steph, thank you so much for joining me and filling the very large shoes that Juliet has left for the
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for asking me to join you. And I'm not sure I can fill Juliet's shoes, but we're going to do our best here and look forward to the discussion.
Yeah, we'll make it through some way, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Steph, you have this episode's question that came in from a listener. So what is it for today?
Okay, Jeff, this question came from Michael Flanagan. And Michael is asking us in the medical mailbag, is there any value to taking medium chain triglycerides, that's MCT oil, before a race or long training? It is sold as providing long-term energy to endurance athletes. So, Jeff, what do you think?
Like so many things, it is sold to endurance athletes for something. And the question is do we buy into what they're selling or do we sort of look at it and say, maybe not? Well, it's an excellent question and something that I hadn't looked at before. And so my interns and I dug into the medical literature on this and we actually found quite a few papers. This has been looked at pretty extensively for a variety of reasons. I initially thought medium chain triglycerides were the components of Lorenzo's oil. I don't know if you've heard of that or if you remember that.
I have not heard of Lorenzo's oil.
Lorenzo's oil was a kitschy movie from, I believe, the late 80s, might be early 90s. It starred Nick Nolte and Susan Sarandon as parents of a boy who had adrenal leukodystrophy. And that is a terrible disease. It's a terminal neurologic disease where the white matter of the brain just kind of wastes away. And they were desperate to find some kind of treatment for this. And they stumbled across this oil called Lorenzo's oil, which is derived from rapeseed and one other, I think was it palm oil? I can't remember anymore. I'm sorry. But anyways, it turns out medium chain triglycerides, not Lorenzo's oil. That's the most important thing. So if you're familiar with the movie, that's not what we're talking about today. We're going to be talking about something completely different. Medium chain triglycerides are derived from coconut oil and from the palm kernel seed or something like that. And basically they are differentiated from normal triglycerides in that they are not long chain. So they are very significantly shorter chain triglycerides. And the reason that they are thought to benefit athletes is because these triglycerides can gain access to our cells and then our mitochondria very, very quickly, as opposed to long chain triglycerides, which require a whole bunch of transport chains, which require enzymatic processes to break them down into smaller molecules. So the idea is that if you were to take some medium chain triglycerides in the forms of, you can buy them in oils that you just kind of add to foods or liquids or whatever. You can take them with an eyedropper. And if you take these things, the idea is they get absorbed into your bloodstream and they very, very rapidly get into your cells, get into your mitochondria, where they provide a lot more ATP than do carbohydrates. So it seems sort of stands to reason that these are going to be good things. And people have looked for quite a while to see, well, is this actually bearing out? Because as I've explained before, even though the physiology and the chemistry predicts a certain outcome, until we test it, we don't actually know. So the first paper we came across and the one that really kind of was probably the best one that we found on this is titled The Effects of Medium Chain Triglyceride Oil Supplementation on Endurance Performance and Substrate Utilization in Healthy Populations, a systematic review. And this paper basically looked at 15 different studies that were specifically investigating the use of medium chain triglycerides as an energy source for cyclists specifically. And the results were not as exciting as the marketers of this stuff would want, unsurprisingly. I'll just give you the high level sort of overview. Six studies were centered around cycling time trials and time to exhaustion. Three of those six studies showed that medium chain triglycerides provided no positive or negative performance benefit for those who consumed it during exercise. So basically not helping at all or potentially even adversely impacting performance. Two of the six studies demonstrated that medium chain triglycerides were overtly negative on exercise performance, and one study showed that medium chain triglycerides seemed to improve endurance performance.
And however, Jeff, I want to make sure, because I think this is one of the salient points you bring up so many times. And, you know, I did look at this paper also, that we remind the listeners that the scope of these studies and the number of participants in each one of these individual studies significantly limits our ability to even know if the results they found are meaningful. So can you talk a little bit to remind the listeners about that piece of it as we talk about what they did find?
Absolutely, because that is such an important point and something that I'd mentioned from time to time, but thank you for reminding me to mention it again. And basically, what we're talking about is the power of a study. The more people that you study, the more power that the study has. And the reason for that is because you're going to, the more people that you have in a study, the more you're kind of going to even out any outliers that there might be. So you kind of like maybe one person in that group is a professional cyclist and they're going to just automatically gain all kinds of benefits from whatever they take. That person could skew the data very heavily if they weren't neutralized by the fact that there was a large number of cyclists, and that person would clearly, their data would then become sort of background noise in a sea of data. So the more people you have, the more powerful your study is to find even small differences. When you have small groups of people, your study is underpowered to find small differences, but they're very well powered to find very large differences. And so what I mean by that is, if you do a small study with a small number of people, if there's really a dramatic difference between using medium chain triglycerides and not, we should see it even with a small group of people. If there's a very small effect, then we're going to need a much larger study than any of these studies did. But interestingly, when there's a negative effect, you can kind of take that to the bank. That's sort of telling you what you need to know. And I want to just come back to what I was sort of saying at the very end there. One study did show some performance benefit, but that was the only study that combined medium chain triglycerides and carbohydrates. The other ones were comparing carbohydrates to medium chain triglycerides. And in every single case, carbohydrates did better than medium chain triglycerides. And there's a number of reasons for that. We'll get to it in a few seconds when I get to some of these other studies. But it seems certainly from this very well-done systematic review that medium-chain triglycerides don't seem to offer the benefits that the people who are marketing it would like us to believe. Now, we did come across a study in the very appropriately named Journal of Oleoscience, which, if you're going to study fats... If you're going to study fats, it might as well be in the Journal of Oleoscience.
Right.
And this one was called Medium Chain Triglycerides with Maltodextrin Increased Fat Oxidation During Moderate Intensity Exercise and Extended Duration of Subsequent High Intensity Exercise. This sounds terrific. And they did find some pretty terrific results. They had eight women, which already, that's amazing because how many studies only study women, right?
Amazing.
So these guys took a look at eight women. They had 2 weeks of intervention with their diet change to be taking in just medium chain triglyceride supplementation. And then they would do this performance evaluation, cycling until exhaustion. Then they would have a washout period, and then they would do the other group. So it was either going to be medium chain triglycerides and carbohydrate or just carbohydrate. And what they found was pretty sensational results that kind of go into the category of, if it's too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. And what they found was dramatic improvements. They showed that using medium chain triglycerides resulted in a time to exhaustion that was almost 35% longer.
Oh, wow.
Just by adding medium chain triglycerides. Yeah. I mean, this sounds terrific. So we dug into the paper a little bit, and it turns out that not only have you not heard of the Journal of Oleoscience, but it seems like a lot of people haven't, because it seems like it's a very proprietary thing. And the author of the study, as well as all of the authors on the study, are in a company that actually produces this stuff. So when the results are this dramatic, you have to question the, you know, how real they are. And clearly there is a conflict of interest here for the authors. And it was the only study we found that was positive.
And did they use an actual product, or they just used some sort of pure absinthe oil? Okay.
They don't say, but the guy who sort of the scientist who was the lead author, his name is Nosaka. He is the chief. What is he? He's the head scientist at the Nissin Olilio group, which makes this stuff. So they clearly had a vested interest in finding good results, and they found very good results. Now, if this was true, we would have expected that some of the studies that were in that systematic review would have showed some benefit, but we didn't find anything, right? Like none of the studies showed any benefit. None of the studies showed anything. So to me, that makes this one paper very questionable, not just because the guy works for the company that makes the stuff, but also because it's not been duplicated by anybody else. So I find it a little bit dubious as to whether or not this really is anything. Another paper, effective carbohydrate or carbohydrate plus medium chain triglyceride ingestion on cycling time trial performance. Basically, no difference. As long as you take carbohydrates, you're going to do well. Adding medium chain triglycerides doesn't seem to help. The one thing that medium chain triglycerides definitely do help is specific forms of epilepsy. And this was one of these things that was found, I think, purely by, I'm not sure actually how it was. I think it was a fluke sort of finding, but there are certain types of genetic seizure disorders that respond really well to diets that are high in medium chain triglycerides. And I don't know the why or the how. I just know that that's the case.
You think it's related to the fact that increases the ketones, and that is a possible treatment that has been used in certain types of epilepsies to manage seizures in a true hospital situation? I want to be clear that I think it's not the ketogenic diet that we hear people being, right? It's a hospitalization, a very controlled situation where you get these patients into a ketogenic state. I don't know if I'm using the right words, but it helps to manage their seizures over time. And I'm wondering do you think it would be related to the fact that the MCTs, it did seem like there might be some increased ketone levels. Whether that translates to performance is a whole different question, but maybe why we're seeing something in epilepsy.
I think it's a very reasonable supposition. I don't know the answer. I'm not a neurologist, nor do I play one on TV.
Right.
So, and these types of epilepsy are quite rare. Yeah. I do know that, as you said, that ketones in certain types of epilepsy are helpful because, again, they can serve as the food source for brain cells. And if you push the brain of these people into a different metabolic pathway, it seems to decrease the formation of some of these other byproducts that may cause them to be unstable and seize. So I wouldn't be surprised if using medium chain triglycerides in that setting is probably contributing to more ketones, and that might help. But going back to endurance performance, when they have looked, some of these studies have been done really well where they've actually looked to see, well, I'm giving medium chain triglycerides. Are the MCTs actually being used as a primary source of fuel, or are ketones being used? And they've done this in very novel kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And what they have found over and over again is that carbohydrates are still taken up primarily as the preferred source of fuel during endurance performance, and that the MCTs, they can get in and they can contribute, but they're not contributing to the extent that we would have predicted. And one of the things that MCTs have been suggested for is weight loss. People have said, oh, if you take medium chain triglycerides and lay off the long chain triglycerides, you can actually see weight loss. No studies have really borne that out. What they did find is that if you take medium chain triglycerides, you kind of hijack your fat metabolism. Your body, like I said earlier, the MCTs gain access to the cells and to the mitochondria really, really quickly and really easily. So what happens is you end up burning the MCTs and not burning your own fat tissues. And so people have found when they use MCTs, they actually don't lose weight. They stay about the same because they're not liberating and then metabolizing their own adipose.
Oh, and very interesting.
I thought that was super interesting as well.
And it's interesting because I'm going to be honest, until you shared this question with me, I had never really heard of the MCT being promoted for endurance athletes. So I found this really fascinating because my only sort of knowledge of a product was that Bulletproof coffee. So the Bulletproof coffee that has the MCT in it. And I always understood that to be something people wanted for weight loss. And I never really thought about it because that is not what I'm trying to do. And so I never really looked into why would somebody want to put oil in their coffee. I grew up in the 80s where it was no fat, no fat, no fat, right? Why would you put oil in your coffee to lose weight, right? So it's very interesting that that is actually not borne out from.
I know about Bulletproof coffee. I haven't really looked at it that carefully, but I have heard that I think that is one of those things where it's supposed to help with weight loss because it uses dairy fat and dairy fat contains a high amount of medium chain triglycerides. So I'm guessing that might be where it's coming from.
Okay.
But again, not terribly effective because, as I said, the medium chain triglycerides sort of get metabolized and then you don't metabolize your own fat, which causes you not to lose adipose tissue,
that's
which is what people are trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The last study we found was Triglycerides of Medium Chain Fatty Acids, a Concise Review, which is a great title. It tells you that you're in for a short paper, but it wasn't that short. Basically, they just looked at medium chain triglycerides and they looked at the literature. This wasn't a research paper at all, but it was more of a review of other papers. And what they found was medium chain triglycerides initially discovered and promoted as a source of energy back in the 1950s. They're quite safe. They don't seem to have any adverse effects. They're not related to cardiac issues the way long chain fatty acids are. They can potentially lead to greater fat oxidation and more energy expenditure, but again, that seems to be at the expense of using all the medium chain triglycerides and not using your own. They can be used, I thought this was interesting, they can be used as an immediate energy source for those who cannot metabolize sugar. I don't know who that refers to because, I mean, I'm maybe a type 1 diabetic who doesn't have insulin around and they're not able to get sugar into their cells. So medium chain triglycerides can work quite effectively there, but they're still going to have trouble. Diabetics would in terms of getting sugar in. Medium chain triglycerides have been linked to increased or improvements in the types of epilepsy, as I mentioned before. Apparently, it reduces anxiety in rats. No studies in people, but hey, you know, if you have less anxious rats, I mean, that strikes me as possibly a good thing. And finally, they may possibly be beneficial for antiviral treatment and as a possible antimicrobial agent, which I thought was kind of interesting. But I think the answer at the end of all of this, to go back to Michael's question, is no. There is no support for using medium-chain triglycerides as an energy source for endurance performance. It certainly doesn't improve endurance performance. It actually may negatively impact it, and it's not something that I would suggest people use as an energy source during training or race.
Can we talk about one last thing about these that I thought was probably, to me, the thing that I would least use these for is that when you look at the adverse events that occurred in these studies, almost across the board, there were GI distress type AEs that were documented. So adverse events that were documented, vomiting, diarrhea, bloating, gastrointestinal distress in general. So just my take, like, why would I ever want to do that over carbohydrates? For the risk of getting that during training or racing seemed kind
of crazy. Yeah, it's a very valid point. No, it's a very valid point. I mean, it goes back to this notion that you should always train your with your nutrition that you're planning on racing. So if anybody was thinking about using these or does use these currently, I would certainly want to be sure that they were trying them in training to make sure they weren't having any of those adverse events, because I would hate for them to use them for the first time in a race and have their race completely derailed because they developed any of those symptoms, which obviously would not be a good thing. So yeah, I agree with you. I think that important point, and thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Well, Steph, how was your first medical mailbag?
It was enlightening. Thank you, Michael Flanagan, for providing that question, because it was something I was completely unaware of that people were even thinking of using. So now I can work with my athletes if they bring this to me. I will be sure to advise them appropriately. So that was great. Again, we will miss Juliet, or we do miss Juliet, but it's been nice to have this conversation with you, Jeff.
Well, I really appreciate you stepping in and taking a stab at filling her shoes here for the medical mailbag. I really do. And I also very much appreciate your being a longtime Patreon supporter of the program and just being a good friend who I got to meet through doing this podcast, which I think is pretty cool.
Very cool.
If you have a question that you would like for us to answer on the medical mailbag, there are numerous ways to reach me. The easiest is probably just to send me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com. You can, of course, join the private Facebook group for the TriDoc podcast. Just go search for TriDoc podcast, answer the three very easy questions. I'll gain you admittance to the group. You can join the conversation there and, of course, submit your own questions. And the way a couple of people have done recently, you can actually go to my website, which is tridoccoaching.com, fill in the contact form and put your question there. I will get it and answer you by email. And of course, then consider that question for the podcast. Steph, I really appreciate, again, your being here today. It was a fun conversation, and I will look forward to seeing you at the races this summer and certainly in December, if not before then.
Super. See you then, Jeff.
I am excited to have two guests on my podcast today, which is a bit of a change up and going to be a fun conversation. I'm joined today by Coach Aaron Rosen and Michaela Robertson, who are the co-founders of Strides for Strength. They are both RRCA, which stands for Roadrunners Club of America, run certified coaches. They are nurses by degree, which is doubly exciting, especially because you're going to find out that one of them is proximate to me. Very proximate to me. They're both athletes who found their love and passion for running by accident. We're going to talk about that. Both going from non-runners to now multiple-time marathoners, and they've learned so much about life on and off the run. They love to help everyday athletes break through plateaus on the run and beyond. From everyday runs to chasing finish lines, they host retreats. They have never-ending conversations about running on their podcast, and they're here for everything, but they're here today to chat with me about all of the things they've done. Welcome, Aaron and Michaela. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So I don't get to have too many conversations with two people. So we're going to have fun figuring out how to get who talks at each time. So I'm going to start with Aaron. Let's start with Aaron. I understand, Aaron, you're out in Atlanta. So tell me about your history as a runner and how you came to become a running coach.
Yeah. So I've been running for about 6 years now. There's a big race out here in Atlanta called the Peachtree Road Race. It is the America's largest 10K or the world's largest 10K. Don't hold me to either one of those because I'm not sure what the accurate answer is. But it is a very large 10K that we have every year on July 4th. And my now husband, I was with him and he was like, let's run it. And I have never run a 5K in my life. And I was like, sure, cool, sounds good. So I ran the Peachtree Road Race and that the rest is history. I kind of just fell in love with it. And I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. I'm a very all or nothing personality. So it was 6.2 miles straight into 26.2 miles. So I signed up for the Walt Disney World Marathon that following January, ran that. And then I just have been obsessed with seeing how fast I can get in the process.
Yeah, that's not a insignificant jump. Most people will get to a half first, but you bit it all off at once. That's pretty good. And how fast was that first marathon that you did?
First marathon was 4 hours and 32 minutes.
Hey, that's pretty good. How about you, Michaela? How did you come to running?
Oh, man. Yeah. So I am very much like Aaron. I'm all or nothing. And when I'm committed to something, I'm committed. So I had signed up for my first full marathon. It was the Chicago Marathon as a charity runner when I was in college. And then after I signed up for the marathon, I was like, maybe I should try like a shorter distance race before I like jumped in the gun. So I had ran like a half or two leading up to my first training cycle. And I ran Chicago and I remember crossing the finish line and I was like, wow, that was miserable. I felt terrible. I knew nothing about nutrition. My training consisted of some runs in between like late nights at college and eating pizza and all the things. So it was kind of like a hot mess express. But since then, it's just been fun to see like how good can it get and realizing that, wow, you can run a marathon and finish feeling good. You don't need weeks and weeks to recover, all the things. So since then, I just ran my eighth marathon in Houston in January. And kind of throughout all of that, friends and family were coming to me, hey, can you help me train for this? Hey, can you make a training plan for this? And then I had met Erin at Chicago 2021. And she was like, hey, well, actually, she didn't really give me a choice.
No choice.
She was basically like, I like you. You like me. We both like running. Let's start a run coaching business together. And I was like, I just don't know if that's like my thing. And she's like, we're doing it. And then lo and behold, like 2 months later, we had purchased Strides for Strength LLC. And yeah, it's been the best thing ever.
That's terrific. I love that story. And you guys met because you were nurses or did you meet because you were runners? Like, how did that all come together? Because you weren't in the same place.
No, we both ran for the same running team at the time. And we were following each other on Instagram. And we both had an 18, 20 mile long run one weekend. And she was in North Carolina at the time. And I'm obviously in Atlanta. And it was supposed to be pouring down rain. And so we were just like each other's hype girls throughout that run. And we were like, cool, we're going to do this. It's pouring down rain. It's the middle of the summer. Let's do it. Let's rage. And so we just hyped each other up. And then our run group that we both ran with had a shakeout run in Chicago. And that's how we actually met in person, was at that shakeout run.
That's great. And then I don't know what's involved in becoming a certified coach for running. So tell me a little bit about that. What's involved with becoming an RRCA certified coach?
Yeah.
I was waiting for the first time that would happen where there would be this pause and then both would talk so that we got to it.
We got to it. Yeah, there's a online course. It is, Michaela, correct me if I'm wrong, because it was a little bit ago when I took it, but it is a 3-day course. And then that third day you have an exam that they open up and test you over all the knowledge. There's this huge book that you have to study and all this stuff of like different types of runs and like getting into like the technical side of running. So both of us sat and did that 3-day course to kind of like dive into the sciencey side of running, if you will.
And now you guys, I know I've seen your site. You have a very nice website, which I understand you designed, Aaron. Is that what you told me?
Okay, I can't take full credit because we did have a website designer, but I did fix a lot of it, which like for me, that
no, you guys,
I don't do technology. So,
well, it looks really nice. And on your site, I saw that you have templated programs. You offer one-on-one coaching, and I will have links to that in the show notes. And I encourage anybody who's interested in just the community and the run coaching that Aaron and Michaela are talking about, you should check it out. It's pretty cool. And then you also have a podcast. Tell me about your podcast that you guys do.
And this is where I come in, because Aaron was like, you're starting a business with me. And I was like, well, then you're starting a podcast with me. It's just so fun so what we used to do is we would host monthly team calls for our athletes. And we would go over like educational things, or if like race season was coming up, we'd go over race prep and these kinds of things. And we realized that we were really missing like the education and the community piece for the larger masses. So we were like, well, what if we started a podcast? So we started the Strides for Strength podcast. Coach Aaron and I, everybody who listens, are like, you guys are just like two best friends chatting. And sometimes it's a little bit unhinged, but it is very tangible, tactical. And it's like you're listening to two best friends who love running. We love bringing on guests. We talk about everything from race day prep to strategy to mindset. We do bring on our athletes after they do a race, and we talk about their build and their training cycle and their race, and just hold space for them to reflect. So it's really fun to relive that experience with them, but through their eyes. That's probably my favorite kind of episode. And then Coach Aaron and I will also do like our own personal post-race recaps. It's really cool to, as a coach, when you're reaching those next levels or you're learning new things, to be able to unpack it and kind of share the more tangibles of like how you got there. So yeah, that's the Strides for Strength podcast.
No, I like that. And do you, I'm curious, as coaches who are in the healthcare profession, similar to what I do, do you encounter a lot of the same kinds of things that I do? So on the TriDoc podcast, you know, I have a segment that's dedicated to answering listener questions that are related to health and wellness topics. Frequently, that has to do with supplements or other products that are marketed to triathletes that are promising all kinds of things. The science, or I should say the pseudoscience, that a lot of these manufacturers will use to try and entice triathletes to part with their hard-earned cash dollars is really quite rampant. And I'm curious if you see the same thing with runners. Are a lot of your athletes being told they need X, Y, or Z, and do they come to you with those questions?
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting, I guess, realization topic, if you will. Because I think, like, in general, especially, like, nurses and healthcare workers with busy schedules, a lot of times it's, like, the quick fix or what's going to get me there the fastest, rather than actually zooming out and looking at all of the pieces. And I feel like with endurance athletes in particular, it's this, like, hungry, steadfast chase to get, insert air quotes, faster, or to break the PRs, or to see the numbers go down faster. So I feel like that's a lot of the conversations that we have, of doing the work, like the 1% of work that's not just running. So things like sleep and nutrition and dialing in on those. So maybe it's not necessarily like supplement targeted, at least not that I've seen. Aaron, maybe you could speak to it differently, but that's kind of where I would say a lot of our audience and athletes are.
Yeah, agreed. I've never personally had someone come to me and ask specific questions about like certain supplements, I guess, but we do make it a really big focus to like hone in on nutrition. So like we make it a point to prioritize our athletes are eating before their runs, and you're getting the appropriate amount of carbs and stuff like that before your run. So instead of like focusing solely on the supplementation of it, we try, and even though granted we aren't nutritionists, but we do have like a baseline knowledge of what people should be eating before their runs, after runs, et cetera. Yeah. So we try and really focus on that. And then we also, with having our podcast and having Michaela and I both, we have a wealth of knowledge in our corner of people that we know that are functional medicine, NPs, PAs, whatever, that maybe have more of a knowledge about that we bring onto our podcast. And then we give to the world, if you will, to allow them to listen to it and have someone who knows about that stuff more than we do. Because one thing that we do pride ourselves in is that if we don't know something, both of us are like, hey, let me find someone that knows more about this than we do. So, yeah.
One of the things that we deal with in triathlon is the time constraint. It's a big issue for training. You know, triathlon is a very time-consuming kind of pursuit because you have to dedicate time to three different activities. And biking takes the biggest chunk of time. With running, you can obviously, unless you're training for a marathon or ultra marathon, you don't need quite as much time. Do you find that you see athletes coming from kind of jobs to running because they don't need quite as much time to dedicate to their training? Do you find that you are dealing with a lot of people from those kinds of careers? Like, you're both nurses. Nurses have long hours, and yet you can still manage to get in. And a lot of the nurses I work with, they're working 12-hour shifts, but they could still find time to do a run. It's a lot harder to train for triathlon around 12-hour shifts. I have some triathletes who try to do it, and it's difficult. I'm curious if you see people coming to you who, for example, might have tried triathlon at some point or tried other kinds of activities, and they end up sticking with running because it's an easier activity to fit in with a really busy lifestyle.
I've had the exact opposite, actually. I've had people that came to me and they started with running and they were like, this is great, get their feet wet kind of thing. And then they've transitioned into triathlon. So actually the exact opposite, not saying that that's how it always is, but I've worked with a couple of athletes that have made that transition or have, and we use like cycling as a supplement to running instead of it's like a core of your workouts as far as like triathlon goes. So I think that the athletes that I have coached that have made that switch have done like the supplemental cycling that we program for them for like cross training days. And they're like, oh, I really like this. This is a lot of fun. Let me dig into this more. And then they're willing to make that time commitment in order to add that in more and dig into that a little bit more than they were.
Yeah. If they can make the time. I mean, I've done running races and I love running races, but the finish line of a triathlon, I've always said, is different. And I've always enjoyed finishing a triathlon more than a running race for various reasons. So yeah, if you can make the time to get the swimming and the biking done, I can understand that. One of the other things about triathlon versus running, and this is not to say one is better than the other, but with triathlon, I know that with injury concerns, so people who get running injuries, it's easy to transition them to stay active with biking and swimming. How do you manage your runners who might be prone to injury or manage your runners to try and avoid injury? I heard you say already that you incorporate cycling as a cross training. But when you're running, when you're training for a marathon, you've still got to get that volume in. So what do you guys do with runners who are either prone to injury or who get injuries? How do you keep them active? How do you keep them training towards their goal events?
Yeah, I think too, it's like a very like individualistic approach. Like all of our athletes, we program on a one-on-one basis and those plans are updated week to week. So we can get that feedback of like, how are you feeling? Are there tweaks, aches, pains that are happening? And if so, you know, I think too, there's like this misconception that training for a marathon, yes, of course you need to get that like larger volume and like those longer runs, but that's going to look different person to person. For example, Erin currently in like her sweet spot training cycle, she's running about 50 mile weeks. For me, during my training cycles, 35 to 40 is my max. That is my peak. And I still thrive on race day. So everybody's just like a little bit different in what their body can adapt to and respond to. So like really open communication, incorporating things like strength training, also cycling, talking about nutrition. And also a lot of our athletes, we talk about, you know, like how can we form like a team? Do you need to go to physio? Do you need to go to acupuncture? Who else can we utilize in your community or network to help you optimize your performance and get to your finish line and beyond healthy and feeling good? So sometimes that means pulling back on running mileage and incorporating other things and knowing that that's okay too. So I think it just depends person to person.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Michaela said, it's so individualized. I've worked with athletes that are injury prone, and having someone in your corner to be able to tweak things the way that you need it is a game changer in my opinion. Because the people that I've worked with that are injury prone, maybe they're training for a half marathon or a marathon, and instead of just getting that cookie cutter template that some people go online and Google and get, and seeing that they have a 14, 15 mile long run, if you're an injury prone athlete, maybe break that up. Maybe have a medium long run the day before, a medium longer run the next day, and then incorporate some cycling. Because like the basis of running a marathon is learning how to run on tired legs or even a half marathon. That's what you really want to nail, is being able to go out there and be like, wow, my legs are really sore from maybe the day before. I need to learn how to adapt and overcome and keep pushing. And so you can do that even running back-to-back days instead of just putting all your runs on one day. So maybe for that injury-prone athlete, that's a better option, and you're still going to get the benefits from it.
It's such a fine balance, right? You want people to learn how to run tired, but you have to keep them on that very fine sort of razor's edge of running while they're tired, but not tipping over and then overdoing it and becoming injured. What do you do with the athlete who comes to you and sort of a novice runner and is, okay, I signed up for the Chicago Marathon and my goal is to qualify for Boston? Because I get these triathletes who come to me and it's like never done a triathlon before and they're signed up for their first Ironman. And they're like, okay, I'm going to qualify for Kona. And how do you, I'm sure you see the same thing, but just in the running world, it's going to be a Boston qualifying time. So how do you guys handle those kinds of conversations?
I think
In my opinion, I was that runner. So I feel like holding space for those big dreams is really important. Like when I ran my Disney marathon in 4 hours and 32 minutes, I was like, I'm going to qualify for Boston. I don't know when. I know it's going to happen, but I don't know when. So I think holding space for that is super important. And maybe sitting down with them and being like, okay, maybe it's not going to be this Chicago, but maybe we can come up with a game plan together to figure out the steps that we need to take in order to get you there. Whether that be you run this marathon and then we focus on a shorter cycle and we get your speed up to where it needs to be, and then just focus on holding that speed for a little bit longer and a little bit longer and a little bit longer each time until you can get to that goal time that you want to be. But I think not diminishing that goal, because I honestly love when people come to us with like huge goals. That's kind of one of my favorite things.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you, Erin. I think holding that space, and something that I like to, you know, do with my athletes is whether it's a BQ goal or a time goal, it's okay, why? Let's unpack this and figure out like what the bigger picture is and like the deeper meaning of why you're setting this time-based goal or whatever. And a lot of times I have athletes, you know, when they have a time goal for a race, also let's set other goals too that have nothing to do with time and maybe more so directed towards performance or self. And it's interesting when you have those conversations, like a lot of times it's like the meaning that you attach to achieving said goal. And once we unpack that and really say it out loud for what it is at face value, it's okay, maybe it's not actually as important to me right now as it seems to be. And I'm very much like Erin, like that was my goal from the get-go. Like I'm going to BQ. And now 5-6 years later, still haven't BQ, but it means nothing about myself as an athlete or my identity. And so I think it's like detaching from that and really just like embracing the day-to-day. But I totally agree, like holding the space for that too.
What do you guys think about the footwear issue? And it's been somewhat interestingly controversial in triathlon. Pros have been wearing these sort of mocked up, almost shoes that aren't available for age groupers and setting like crazy times. And then the triathlon organizations came out and said, okay, we're not going to allow that anymore. You have to wear shoes that are within certain specifications. And I've seen that the running organizations have done that as well. What is your advice to your athletes? Do you tell them to go out and get the super shoes? And if they get the super shoes, are you telling them to train in them? Because we know about some of the injury risks that we're starting to see associated with training in them. How do you guys approach or what are your thoughts about super shoe use?
I personally love a good super shoe because I feel like that kid in kindergarten that got a nice new pair of shoes and they just like feel really fast and they want everyone to look at how fast they can run. But no, I do not tell all my athletes to go out and purchase it. I don't think you need to be in a super shoe in order to run fast. I think that you can do it on your own. Is it a nice supplement? Yes. But I think you could absolutely do it on your own. 100%, I say don't run in them all the time. Because if you have something that is great and you run in it every single day, I feel like it sort of takes away that special effect, if you will, like that feel-good effect. Not only is it an injury risk, but you're taking that away too. But personally, maybe Michaela has a different opinion, but I love a good fast shoe that makes me feel fast.
You know, and I'm like, I don't really care about super shoes. I'm like, I could care less. I very much agree with Erin, though, too. I think it's if you're always wearing it, it's taking away the greatness of it. But I think, too, for example, like before New York City, I was like, oh, I'm going to buy a super shoe. And then I bought a super shoe and I didn't wear it for longer than a 14-mile run and my feet were super miserable. So I'm just kind of like, I'm going to stick to the tried and true trusty Hokas. Thank you. So that's my take on it.
All right. Well, that was a mild disagreement. That's about as close as I've gotten to conflict from you two. Is there anything you guys overtly disagree upon?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny that you ask that.
Well, let's bring it on.
The flavor grape. Disgusting.
Christmas movies. I hate them. Michaela loves them.
Christmas comfy is nasty.
We running things, we for the most part agree on a lot of things. But when you get us outside of the running world, we honestly don't have a lot in common.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't really think there's, which is why I think we get like our community is a direct reflection of like our values as coaches, is because we very much share a lot of the similar like approaches to training and mindset and all of the things. And it's, I feel like we really tailor to each other's strengths and weaknesses, if you will. So
yeah, we're learning as we go too. It's funny. We just recently went to New York to cheer and people were running by, or I think it was Chicago. We went to both. I don't know which one it was. And people were running by and I was like, oh, that's so-and-so. That's so-and-so. That's so-and-so. Just like naming all these like big, like elite, sub-elite runners. And she was like, who are these people? Michaela is very much so the type of runner that's like, I'm just here for a good time. Let's run fast. This will be fun. And I'm like tied to the data. Like I know who people are, like very type A. And Michaela's like, I'm just here for a good time. I love this.
It's kind of funny because my colleague and friend, Juliette Hockman, who I do the medical mailbag segment on this program, is kind of similar. I know all the pros. I know them all and all their data and all their who they are and what they're doing. And she's kind of the same way. She's very, very just there to enjoy. So I get that. Any final thoughts? What do you guys have coming up on your own personal calendars? What do you have planned for the future of Strides for Strength?
Running wise, I am training for my 8th marathon. So I'll be in Carmel, Indiana, not California, because everyone gets that very confused. I didn't know there was a Carmel, either one, but until I signed up for the race. But I'll be doing the Carmel, Indiana marathon in April. And then
I'm going to interrupt for just a second and say Carmel, California is dramatically nicer.
If you have
the opportunity, you definitely want to visit the Carmel in California.
I know. That's what I've heard. Everyone keeps talking about that. And I'm like, great. Now I have to go run a race in Carmel, California, because everyone keeps asking me about it. But no, I just was looking for a flat, fast course. And Carmel, Indiana was a small, flat, fast course. So I was like, great. Sign me up. Yeah. So we have that. And then as far as our Strides for Strength future, we have our Strides for Strength retreat, our second annual coming up in May. So we'll be in Pittsburgh. We have some athletes running the marathon, half marathon, some doing the relay. And those are honestly our favorites because it's just such a fun weekend and we get to meet everyone and hug everyone in real life that we get to work with on a all the time basis. And then we'll also be in Chicago this year. We have a solid squad of Strides for Strength athletes that are going up there to run the Chicago Marathon. So we'll be up there cheering and Michaela will be running for that weekend as well.
Yep. Yeah. Super exciting. I'm kind of in the off season right now. I just ran a big PR at Houston in January. So kind of just rebuilding, getting back to my base mileage, dabbling in some trail running when I can, when it's not super muddy. And then I'll start training for Chicago come May. So I'm excited for that.
All right. And we just learned before we started recording that Michaela is very proximate to my location, so proximate that we work in the same building. So,
that's wild.
Yeah. So we'll have an opportunity to meet face to face and discuss running. So that'll be exciting. You're not doing Colfax then?
Okay. Actually, I am signed up for Colfax. I'm signed up for the half, but I haven't decided if I'm like actually going to run. I mean, I probably will go run it for fun, but I'm not going to be racing it. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see you there. I'm doing that one as a training run in the lead up to the Boulder 70.3. So we'll talk.
Sweet. Sounds good.
Michaela Robertson, Aaron Rosen are the co-founders of Strides for Strength. They're both running coaches. You can hear their podcast. You can learn about their services as coaches and all of the things they offer on their website. I will have links for all of those things in the show notes. Thank you both for being here today. I really enjoyed the conversation, learning a little bit about both of you and what you are both doing. And I wish you both the best of luck in your endeavors and in your running races that are coming up.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And that's it for another episode. The TriDoc Podcast is produced and edited by me, Jeff Sankoff, along with my interns.
I'm Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson.
Oh, how you doing?
No relation.
I'm Jeff Sankoff, the TriDoc. I'm in charge here.
Not anymore.
Those interns are Ian Johnson and Ben Johnson. You can find the show notes for everything discussed on the show today, as well as archives of previous episodes at tridocpodcast.com. Do you have questions about any of the issues discussed on this episode, or do you have a question that you'd like for me to consider answering on a future episode? Send me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com, or join the private TriDoc Podcast Facebook group on Facebook, and you can submit your questions there. If you're interested in coaching services, please visit tri.coaching.com or lifesportcoaching.com, where you can find a lot of information about me and the services that I provide. You can also follow me on the TriDoc Podcast Facebook page, TriDoc Coaching on Instagram, and the TriDoc Coaching YouTube channel. If you enjoyed this podcast, I hope that you'll consider leaving me a rating and a review, as well as subscribe to the show wherever you download it. And of course, there's always the option of becoming a supporter of the podcast at patreon.com/TriDocPodcast. The music heard at the beginning and the end of the show is Radio by Empty Hours and is used with permission. This song and many others like it can be found at ReverbNation.com, where I hope that you'll visit and give small independent bands a chance. The TriDoc Podcast will be back again soon with another medical question for me to answer and another interview with someone in the world of multisport. Until then, remember 1121 and train hard, train healthy.